It's part of the political rhythm of this state. Even-numbered years mean lots of politics to talk about. Not only do we have a presidential primary and state Supreme Court race coming up next month, and a special congressional election in May, but Wisconsin will be in the national spotlight as the home of the Democratic National Convention and as a swing state in November. Meanwhile, all members of the Wisconsin Assembly and half the state Senate have to win in November to keep their jobs. And what that's meant is a flurry of activity in Madison as legislators get ready to shift into campaign mode. We'll talk about what passed, what didn't, what got vetoed, and mostly we'll talk about how it impacts us here in western Wisconsin. It's our legislative update today on the West Side. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and we have two legislators joining us today. They include Janet Bewley. She's the Democratic State Senator from Mason. She represents the 25th Senate District, which is a big one. It includes all of Barron, Washburn, Douglas, Ashland, Bayfield, Iron, and Price counties, as well as portions of Dunn, St. Croix, Polk, Burnett, Sawyer, and Vilas counties. Senator Bewley served two terms in the Assembly before being elected to the Senate in 2014 and reelected in 2018. She is the Assistant Minority Leader in the Senate. Janet Bewley, good to have you with us today.
Thank you, Dean. It's great to be with you this morning.
Also joining us today is Romaine Quinn, the Republican State Senator from Barron. He represents the 75th Assembly District, which, as a matter of fact, lies entirely within Senator Bewley's Senate District and includes all of Barron County, southern Washburn County, and small portions of Burnett, Polk, St. Croix, and Dunn counties. He's former mayor of Rice Lake and was elected to the Assembly in 2014, initially has been reelected ever since. He's currently vice chair of the majority caucus in the Assembly. Romaine Quinn, good to have you along.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So if you have questions or comments, we always welcome your calls, and we generally get some during these legislative updates. So whether you're in the districts of these particular legislators or not, if you have a question about what's going on in state government, 800-228-5615 is your number to call, 800-228-5615. So let's get started on some of the action from last week. Friday was a big day, lots of stuff happening. On Friday, Governor Evers vetoed several bills that would have increased criminal penalties in Wisconsin. Now, these bills were part of a Republican-backed package they called Tougher on Crime. Senator Bewley, the backers of the bills say that those bills would deter criminal activity. So why did our Democratic governor reject them?
Well, you know, deterring criminal activity at a time when we have overcrowded prisons means to me that we should be doing something to prevent these crimes in the circumstances where people live before we continue to lock more people up. The penalties are pretty good where they are, but I think that simply falling to the argument that we can stop crime by incarcerating more people, I think, is illogical and it has not been proven to hold true.
Well, Representative Quinn, the governor says the Tougher on Crime package is an unfunded mandate that would, as Senator Bewley said, put a strain on an already crowded Wisconsin prison system.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's either or, right? We always talk about we need to invest more in our schools to prevent our children from going down a path of crime, or invest in more initiatives in our prisons to get people back on their feet, and that we shouldn't be locking more people up. But it's not an either or. We can invest in treatment and diversion and programming in our prisons to reduce recidivism, but at the same time, that doesn't mean we have to turn a blind eye to those criminals who are continually committing crimes over and over again. And that's where some of this stems from. It's not so much in my district or Senator Bewley's district, but the carjacking problems they're having in the suburbs around Milwaukee, I think that frustration has stemmed from a lot of this, and it's making sure we're closing that revolving door on the same people that local law enforcement are arresting over and over again.
One of the bills the governor vetoed would have expanded the number of crimes for which juveniles could be tried as adults. Representative Quinn, do we really want more kids in prison, especially considering the difficulties we've had with juvenile justice in this state in the last year or two?
Well, you know, I do support a DA's discretion when it comes to charging certain people with what crime. But again, what we're finding in those areas, in the problem areas in the state, is that it used to never be youth that were carjacking. Now the average age for carjackers is 18. And so, again, I think part of this stems from more specific crimes. But again, as they work with law enforcement to develop these bills, it's for trying to end this revolving door of the same people getting arrested, let right back out, and then committing those same crimes over and over again. And I'm sorry, I didn't address the financial piece either on the prison piece, that, yeah, we may have to look at not investing in building new prisons just because of capacity, but we have really old prisons, including up in the Green Bay area, that are operating from the 1800s, that we could save millions of dollars annually just by investing in a state-of-the-art prison that makes sure we take care of our inmates and it protects our workers, too. So I think we will have to have a conversation in the near future about not building prisons because we want more people in them, but making sure that those that are in there now are safe, including our staff, and that we're actually saving taxpayer dollars at the same time.
The majority leader of the Senate, Scott Fitzgerald, said the governor's vetoes of the crime bills means he's not as concerned about the safety of Wisconsinites as the Republican-led legislature. Senator Buley, how much do you hear from your constituents about the need to get tougher on crime?
Though that phrase, get tougher on crime, is rather antiquated, and I don't hear that much from the people in my district. Of course, they're concerned about crime, and they're concerned about epidemics of drug abuse. But I think that what people are hearing more and more, what I am hearing more and more, is how kids are not given the kind of opportunities that they might be able to find in larger cities. We need to invest in our schools. If someone who is 15, 16, or 17 is committing a crime, we're not serving them. We need to make sure that we give kids the best chance at a good life as we possibly can. And we don't do that by trying juveniles as adults. It's just the wrong way to go. We also know that when an adult is incarcerated or when someone is sentenced as an adult, that burden falls onto the state. And if a minor is incarcerated, that's an expense for the county. We can't give counties the horrible Sophie's choice of do I try them as a juvenile or as an adult and send them off to the state prison. That's a terrible, terrible outcome for a juvenile, and we do not need to be doing that more.
It's a legislative update today on the West Side. Your number to call is 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. If you'd like to talk to either of our legislators and our audience about the questions and concerns you have about what's happening in state government, our guests are Janet Buley. She's the state senator representing the 25th Senate District, and Romaine Quinn. He's the state representative representing the 75th Assembly District. So due to an unexpected increase in tax revenue, Wisconsin expects to have a surplus of more than $700 million at the end of the current two-year budget cycle next June. The Republican legislature passed a tax cut plan to spend down part of that money, but the governor vetoed it last week. Senator Buley, it's our money. Shouldn't we get some of it back if we overpaid?
Well, you will get it back. You'll get it back in the form of aids to education. We know that our schools are not funded at the level that they should be, particularly our rural schools. And the governor did propose a tax cut. So we got both in the governor's proposal. What was vetoed is returning all of it, which would average out to just about $100 per family. This is a projected surplus that we don't know for sure if we're going to have. My proposal would be to invest it, as the governor said, into our schools, which have not reached the levels of funding that we know they'd need, and to also, I would have liked to see it go into some things like bridges. I really think that we need to invest in things where we can see an immediate return.
When he vetoed the bills, the governor said he'd support a compromise to spend down the surplus that would supply some broad property tax relief while investing in education, as Senator Buley says. Representative Quinn, can the two parties get together to get something done on this, do you think?
Well, I do believe that, but just a couple things. So these are tax collections that are already coming in higher than what we had projected. So it's not that we're trying to cut a check back to people with money that we don't already have in the bank. And again, part of it goes to, you know, we set a budget every 2 years. It's a long, lengthy process. It's a ton of compromising, a lot of conversations. And when we set that budget, that's what we agree to spend over the 2 years on the areas that I think both Democrats and Republicans all care about, especially schools. So again, I would just be curious on what the senator believes is enough spending on schools, because we hear this every budget. So this budget, we put in over $500 million in new money in schools, the same amount Governor Evers asked for when he was state superintendent of public instruction, but every time we hear it's never enough. So I agree, we need to make these investments, and we did this last budget. But when we set a budget, we compromise, this is what we're spending, and if we over-collect, there's no reason that we can't give part of it back to the people that paid it. And not only that, it wasn't just a tax cut. If you recall, we were going to take $100 million and pay down our debt even faster. You know, from 96 to 2019, our debt grew three times the rate of inflation until Republicans took control of the legislature. So it wasn't just a tax cut. It was putting us on sound fiscal footing going forward as well.
I am curious, was there ever consideration of just using the overage to take a chunk out of the state debt? Because if I'm reading it right, the state debt is more than $20 billion. This would be about three-quarters of $1 billion. It would put a little bit of a dent in it anyway. Shouldn't surplus go to service the debt? Representative Quinn, I'll ask you that first.
Yes, and that's what this was going to do, about $100 million of it. And that was, again, we have different views within the Republican Party. There's different views in the Democratic Party. So not all of us wanted to pay down debt. Not all of us wanted to tax cut exactly the same way. So this was a compromise. We're going to pay down debt. We're going to put more in the rainy day fund. We're going to leave some in the checkbook, so we still have that going into the next budget. And we're going to eliminate a tax on local manufacturers. So I think it was a win-win for taxpayers. And we made a fundamental change, which I think people forget too, is that right now, when we have a surplus, we dedicate half of that to the rainy day fund until we hit about 5% of our total general fund that we want to set aside. Going forward, we want to take half of that and structurally pay that debt down automatically. So that way, it doesn't sit in the fund where we can just spend it, because debt is a tax. And so that was a structural change. I think that was important for us too, which I hope we bring back if we look at overriding the veto.
Representative Buehle, I'll give you a last word on the tax cuts and what to do with the surplus before we go to break.
Well, spending down debt is a goal that everybody wants, but I'd like to point out that the increase in bonding has gone up under the Walker administration, and debt is something that we need to consistently not get into. We don't need to continually borrow money for transportation, that's where most of the bonding has gone in. So let's not do that kind of bonding, and let's work. It's a long-term problem. Let's work to bring down our debt by not incurring debt. Also, I truly believe that that people want to have a choice in what we do with the surplus. It's there, and we need to have conversations with the people of Wisconsin on what to do with it.
That's the voice of State Senator Janet Buehle. We're also joined by State Representative Romaine Quinn. It's our legislative update here on the West Side. What issues do you have that you want our legislators to address today? It's your chance to let them hear you. Call 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is the West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back talking about what's happening in the Wisconsin legislature with two of our Western Wisconsin legislators, State Representative Romaine Quinn of Barron and State Senator Janet Buehle of Mason. During his State of the State address in January, Governor Evers called a special session of the legislature to deal with the ongoing struggles of Wisconsin dairy farms. The Assembly didn't wait for a special session. It passed six bills that would, among other things, fund efforts to increase dairy exports, set aside money for dairy processor grants, create greater tax breaks on ag buildings and farmers' health insurance, and direct the University of Wisconsin system to study the problems facing farmers and to develop programs to meet their needs. Representative Quinn, your district is in the heart of what has been dairy country. Will these measures help, or is it too little too late for the family dairy farmer?
No, it'll definitely help, and I could talk all day on this subject. I do want to correct the record just real quick before we went to the break. Overall state debt is actually down under the Walker administration, not up. And I can get a Fiscal Bureau memo on that if you'd like. But in terms of the dairy package or the farming package in general, you know, I was happy to see Governor Evers make this a priority. You know, a lot of us, you know, said for a while he seemed to kind of ignore rural Wisconsin. So we're definitely open to this. And that's why we took it and we ran with it. There's other ideas we added in. We kept some of his ideas as well. We add additional funding to certain areas. You know, when we talk about dairy exports, and we took that from $1 million to $5 million. And Representative Tranel and some of the other farmers in our caucus actually came up with the tax proposals that would essentially put cash in the hands of farmers, because that's what they need today, is that they need to catch up on their bills from the winter. They need to get ready for the spring planting season, and they need cash in their hands to keep operating and getting through until hopefully milk prices come up. And that's the big issue, that we can spend all sorts of money on mental health, on property tax reductions, or you name it, but at the end of the day, until nationally as a country, and I kind of differ with my party on this, until we find a way to make sure farmers are getting a fair price for their milk, there is not a lot the state of Wisconsin can do. This package is important, but we need to have a national conversation of what do we want our dairy industry to look like, and is it worth paying a little bit more at the store so that all those barns, as you drive through my district, still have the lights come on in the morning and at night with families operating those institutions. So I think we're getting there. The Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation and Farmers Union have been tag-teaming on this, having these discussions. I think Senator Buley and I both helped host an event just this last week in Madison to have this conversation as well. So I think there's bipartisan support, but that's the big conversation we need to have. But this agricultural package is a step in the right direction.
Senator Buley, it certainly appears there's bipartisan support here. These bills passed the Assembly unanimously, and the Senate has yet to take up any of those bills. That'll happen later this month. J.R. Ross, though, the editor of WisPolitics, said this weekend on Wisconsin Eyes Rewind program that he's heard rumblings that there is a core group of Senate Republican caucus members that don't want to spend any money outside the budget. Will this tax ag relief package make it through the Senate?
That's a very good question, and I hope they do. I agree with Representative Quinn that this is a very important set of bills to get passed. I wish it went a little further. I wish some of them were more directed at small farms. I think that the biggest impact will be to the larger farms. But again, it's very important that we get these passed. I also know, and as Representative Quinn said, that we do need to push the federal government to do something on the farm policy at the national level. Until we get a better understanding and a better grip on the price of milk and how farmers are going to be able to plan long-term to stay economically viable, we're going to be patching together bills like this to bail them out, but we're going to consistently see a reduction in the number of farms, particularly small ones. And Wisconsin was built on small dairy farms, and I'm hoping that we don't have to see the end of that extremely important part of our culture. And not to volley back and forth with my good friend Representative Quinn, I was referring to transportation, and that transportation bonding has gone up.
We're talking with State Senator Janet Buley and State Representative Romaine Quinn. It's our legislative update here on the West Side. You can join the conversation by calling 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. Let's bring Mike into the conversation. Mike's from Russ County. Mike, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hi. You know, so I'm in my mid-50s, late-50s, and I voted Republican most of my years. But I tell you, I can't do it anymore, and here's why. The Republican Party has lost its way on especially budget items, fiscal items, and so forth, in the sense that they have this thing about tax cuts. And I'm just old school enough to know that as long as there is a budget or, a debt that either the state or the federal government has, we need to keep our eyes on the debt as well as the budget itself. And we need to service the debt. Going out and bonding, you know, for example, very best example of this is the roads. The roads costs are increasing and have been every year since I've been alive as a percentage of what it costs to put a mile of road in. But our funding has not. And it's just absolutely comical to call yourself a fiscal conservative if you're going to say that we are not going to keep funding and revenue inputs on pace with the actual costs of doing the roads. And in deference to that, we're going to go give a handout to yet another group that's been paying the political bills. We're going to go give another handout to them when that money is sitting there and could very well be applied to fixing a bridge, fixing an on-ramp, fixing some township roads, fixing some county roads. Hell, up here in Russ County, we've got a couple roads here where they're seriously talking about going back to gravel because they can't properly maintain the blacktop. This is just ludicrous.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Representative Quinn, I'm going to let you have first shot at that since he was frustrated as a Republican to see that. And I know that this was an area under Governor Walker where it was one of the few areas, at least publicly, where the governor and the legislature seemed to tangle quite a bit as it related to transportation funding. Now that Governor Walker is no longer a player in there, is there a chance the legislature would take a more aggressive view of getting transportation funding to be self-funded the way it used to be with gas taxes, that sort of thing?
Well, if you remember in this budget, you know, we took a major step towards that. We invested about $300 million more that will be going in every year into the foreseeable future. Again, making those investments in roads, which I don't believe are Democrat or Republican. So, yes, transportation bonding did increase under Governor Walker. Overall state debt, when you add it all together, is actually down. But that's a conversation that we've had, and I'm proud of my colleagues in the Assembly. You know, we led on this issue when there was a lot of disagreement in the building within the party on how to fund roads going forward. There was also those of us in rural areas that struggled very hard to say, hey, if you don't want to raise more funds, don't think you're going to cut out-state projects just to fund more mega projects in the southeastern part of the state. So I think we've done a good job in terms of, you know, it takes time before we get to a point where we want to sink more money into something because we want to make sure that every penny is stretched as far as it can. So we did a number of reforms over the last 8 years that make sure every dollar we're spending goes as far as it does. And I think that's why we had a realization this last budget to say we did everything we could to make sure taxpayers know we're honest with them, and now we're going to sink more money into it. But that's still an ongoing conversation. What's the best way to do that? Long term, is it the gas tax? We know that will decline over time. Is it registration? Is it a new mileage fee, which is something that I would oppose. I don't think the government needs to track how many miles you drive. But I think the legislature gets it. The governor gets it. People want good roads. It's just a matter of what the taxpayers are willing to pay and how we're going to collect it to do that.
Well, I would agree on some of it. We don't stray too far all the time, but let me just talk about how we go about making decisions. We know we hear from people when it comes to the roads. We've been hearing it for years, and it disproportionately affects rural areas. Roads going to gravel is not a rural myth. And I know a lot of my colleagues laugh. They go, sure. We are turning roads to gravel. That is absolutely unfair to rural populations. But when we do have a priority, when Foxconn needs a new interchange, suddenly it is done. And we need to put rural issues and transportation issues across the state on the top of the list and have that get done.
Let's shift now. I'd like to go to something kind of related to that because it's an infrastructure issue and it's not roads, but it's broadband. We've done programs in the past year about the increased pressure for reliable broadband in rural areas. The Wisconsin Broadband Office has a target of internet access for all in the state by 2025. Senator Bewley, you represent, as you described, one of the most rural state Senate districts in Wisconsin. Is a 2025 target realistic from what you're seeing in your Senate district?
No, it's not. Not if we don't do something to get to the absolute hardest areas to serve. We come up with motivation for extension of broadband into some of the more difficult areas. But these are incentives for companies that are going to be willing to go there. They will go to the next place that is somewhat affordable, where they're going to get revenue. If we continue to do that, we will never still get to the areas that are most in need of it, because they know they're not going to get the revenue. They're not going to get the payments from the subscribers if they don't have the density. So when we pass a bill that gives them a tax incentive, in this case we passed something on property when you pay your tax bill, personal property, that's still not going to get them to go where they don't want to go. They won't go where they don't want to go until we make a program where we will make sure it goes to the areas that are the hardest to serve. Right now, they can choose not to go there, and they simply won't.
Our reporter Danielle Kading had a story last week about the city of Superior is actually looking at doing this themselves, basically building their own system like they would an internal transportation system to manage broadband in that community because of the unevenness and the expense. Representative Quinn, is this something that the legislature can do something about, or is it something where you just the local government's going to have to put the pressure on folks to get better broadband?
No, this is something that we've been leading on, I know, since I've been elected. So, again, the program created under Governor Walker, the Broadband Expansion Program, was a pilot. It started out spending $500,000 a year trying to help companies with the cost of connecting people who are the furthest out in the sticks, if you will. So we took that program. The last budget under Governor Walker, we spent $7 million a year. And now, under this last budget that we voted for, we're spending $44 million. So just to put that into context, this last year in 2019, we connected 15,000 Wisconsinites, homes, and businesses with a $7 million investment that leveraged another $20 million of private investment. We are going to triple those numbers. We're going to triple those numbers going forward into this year because of what we passed in the budget. Again, that's reaching out to those areas that are hardest to reach, where the rate of return just doesn't exist. And that's what our program does. And so when people criticize our effort, we worked very hard on this. Our program, I traveled to Colorado where we met with stakeholders from cable companies all over the world. In Wisconsin, we have one of the most articulate and smart programs compared to other states in the country. And you have to be willing to compromise and vote for these. And the senator knows my critique of her has just been not voting for a budget the last decade. So it's easy to sit on the sidelines and say the program doesn't work or it doesn't do enough. But if we're not willing to compromise and actually vote for things that move the ball in the right direction, I don't think we have a leg to stand on.
So, well, I think that we need to make sure that when we talk about who's getting served and who's not getting served, I've traveled to Washburn County, and Washburn County has not been able to take advantage of any of the grant programs because they cannot get a provider willing to participate in the grant application. No grant application has come out of Washburn County because no one will go there.
So what can the legislature do about that?
Well, we can do something. We can talk about the things like what Superior is doing. Can we leverage Washburn County or another unit of government to be able to have the power to put this in? Right now, the powers of local governments are limited in what they're allowed to do. We would need to change laws in the state of Wisconsin that would allow units of government to be involved in utilities. That would be a heavy lift, but it would be a way to get it done.
Units of government actually can become internet service providers now under law. They just need to be transparent. They need to have the voters decide if that's the route they want to go. And then once they become that, they can apply for these grants as well. So, again, we've done a lot on broadband. We've invested millions. We're connecting all sorts of people. There's been success. Nearly a third of the grants since 2014 have gone up into northwestern Wisconsin. So we are making progress. Communities can get creative, and it's about working with all those partners to try and make that happen.
That's the voice of State Representative Romaine Quinn of Barron, also joined today by State Senator Janet Bewley of Mason. It's our legislative update, which we do every couple months or so on the west side, to see what's happening in state government and how it's affecting us here in the western part of the state. If you would like to join our conversation, we'd invite you to do so. The lines are open now at 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. You can talk about legislation. You can also talk about what you're hoping for in this political season that's just around the corner. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you're listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back with our legislative update here on The West Side, and we're talking about legislation that has occurred. We'll probably get into the political season a little bit as the program rolls along. Right now, though, I want to talk about another bipartisan package of 13 bills that passed the Assembly. It was a $10 million plan to address the state's ongoing struggles with water quality. Now, 10 of those bills passed unanimously, the other three along party lines in the Assembly. That would involve unbudgeted expenditures. Senator Bewley, do you think these proposals are going to make it when it comes to voting on these in the Senate this month?
I think it'll probably go along the way it did in the Assembly. We need to continue to do everything we can on water quality. I think that what we know is usually a sticking point is the level to which local governments can get involved. And we find that we are limiting the kinds of voice that we can have from counties when it comes to making decisions. And the other part of it is that we still have to address the problem of water treatment in small communities. It is extremely expensive to overhaul some of these older water treatment facilities that we have. And if we continue to do the right thing, which is to talk about what kind of matter we can put into our water, if we don't help communities when it comes to treating water, then we're going to have a lot of small communities in a lot of trouble soon.
Representative Quinn, your vice chair of the Republican caucus of the Assembly. Has your caucus had any inkling from the Senate Republicans that these clean water proposals are going to make it through the Senate?
You know, it's just hard to know because we do an awful lot of compromising with our Senate colleagues to try and get things across the finish line. But at the end of the day, I always say the Assembly works harder because we get a lot more done. We pass a lot more bills, and a lot of bills, good bills, go to the Senate to die, unfortunately. And I'm hoping that this package is not one of them. Again, it doesn't spend an exorbitant amount of money. It's very targeted. It's well thought out. And if we don't do them, I really think it's a slap in the face of the committee members that spent their time traveling the state all over the place. So I know what it was like to serve on the Blue Ribbon Commission on School Funding, the Clean Water Task Force, chaired by Representative Novak and Representative Shanklin. They put an enormous amount of time in this. So I think it's kind of offensive to them and all the members on the committee that worked so hard to be articulate and come up with smart proposals to address real problems if we don't do them. So I would absolutely encourage my Senate colleagues on the Republican side to move these forward.
800-228-5615 is the number to call if you'd like to join Representative Quinn and Senator Bewley and ask them your question or make your comment on our program today. That's 800-228-5615. And we're joined now by Jim, who's calling from Barron County. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning. My question has to do with mental health beds in northern Wisconsin. The last budget had 15 beds set aside for Chippewa funding for 15 beds in Chippewa Falls, and that was vetoed by the governor, and the 15 beds went to Madison. Now, just last week, Attorney General Call was back in Eau Claire advocating for 15 health beds in Eau Claire. I'm curious as what happened, and this seems very inefficient to me. I'll hang up and take my answer offline.
All right. Thank you, Jim. And another bill that did get a unanimous approval in the Assembly would direct state funds toward expansion of mental health care beds in this area. That was a proposal that was championed by State Senator Kathy Bernier. That was in the state budget, as Jim mentioned, that passed the legislature last year. It was vetoed by the governor. The legislature didn't override it. Senator Bewley, are Senate Democrats on board with the proposal this time around?
Well, I think that we have to take a look at what do we mean by serving the communities that need to be served in the north, and that's not Chippewa Falls. That is a long distance for the people in northern Wisconsin, particularly when you're dealing with somebody who needs critical inpatient care. To separate them from their families, to make that trip, I mean, it's a very, very hard thing to get the kind of critical care. We wanted to have a conversation about where those beds would go. And there was only one option, and that would be for the counties to come up with the plan. Counties can't afford to come up with beds. So we had hoped that we could work on this and try to get beds up in the north where they're needed. And Chippewa Falls, quite frankly, isn't the north.
So what is, Senator Buley, what is the assembly feeling about this that you as a Democratic senator are not? Because the Democrats all went along with this in the assembly.
Well, you know, I can't, you know, as Representative Quinn says, that from his point of view in the assembly, you can't really understand sometimes why your colleagues in the Senate, I'm not sure what they were thinking. I really don't, except that, you know, there are more representatives in the southern part of the state than there are in the north. I really want to champion health care in the north. And I'm going to continue to do that. We are going to continue to come up with ways to give plans like perhaps crisis beds, where it's a short-term time that you spend in a quasi-inpatient basis so that people can get stabilized and perhaps not be transported as they are now to very, very distant places. But we just have to continue to work on it and never stop.
So, Representative Quinn, on this mental health facility in Chippewa Falls, is this going to get killed by another veto and that can't be overridden despite the unanimous support in the assembly?
No, I think this one will get signed. And I think the governor, after he vetoed that, realized that he kind of stepped in it, because we heard from DHS directors and police chiefs and other county workers and healthcare professionals all throughout northwestern Wisconsin saying this is a huge improvement. And I guess that's where the senator and I differ, is just because it's not something exactly where we want it doesn't mean we should oppose it. If we can move the ball in the right direction, that's important. And I'll remind the senator that the southern part of her district, Barron County, is not very far from Chippewa Falls. So this proposal has received support from police chiefs in River Falls to Superior to Shell Lake to Rice Lake, and that this would be a huge, huge improvement. And that's why I think it received unanimous support in the assembly. So again, it spends $15 million, will create 22 new beds for both adults and youth for people who are in crisis. Do we need to do more ahead of time before they reach their breaking point? Yes, absolutely. But to say that we should put someone who is suicidal in the back of a squad car and ship them 5 hours to the southern part of the state instead of an hour or an hour and a half because it's not where we want it, I think I just disagree with that. This is an important investment, and when we're hopeful that the governor signs that.
Let's move to another caller. This is Ginny in Shell Lake. Ginny, thanks for joining us.
Hi. Maybe you have moved past this as I've been waiting, but I guess I called in about the internet access in Washburn County, and I totally thank you, Senators, both of you, for helping with bringing internet up here to this point. There's a part, though, that we're not discussing, and that's outside of the legislators' avenue, but something that's hurting the people, and that is, for instance, my parents live in the area that's kind of between northern Spooner and up into Hayward that has terrible internet access. These people and all of us have only a couple of different companies that we can even go through to get internet access. And the companies have my parents paying the exact amount that I am paying for good internet. So for a lot of the elderly communities, they are paying out of a ton of money to have the poor internet. And you can't call. You can't ask. They just say, whatever, this is how it is. We're trying, and it's been years. And so one of the things that could be happening is that the legislators understand that the companies are really charging an arm and a leg to people who don't have advocates to help them understand that this is inappropriate. And there's a lot of elders up here that are living in the woods that don't have, that are paying too much for something that they don't get full advantage of to begin with. And most of them are so patient that they don't know any better, you know. So I just wanted to throw that comment out there, because it is important that the companies that are actually running the business have some sort of stopping point, that they don't get to leech from people. And so that was my comment. And then as I'm listening to you about the shipping of people, that happens so much in northern Wisconsin. And it's beyond just healthcare and mental health, that you go to a rural hospital and you almost always just end up getting transported, and the amount of cost of helicopters and ambulances that are unbelievable. I took my diabetic son, who just needed to be have insulin given to him. He got shipped up to Duluth. And I'm like, if I would have known that he was going to get shipped, I would have just gone to Duluth. But I go to my local hospital, then only to have a big, huge charge and have another fight with healthcare and all kinds of people that in my time, you know, because we have so much shipping out and not enough of those just people that could just be stabilized right there in our local hospital. So thank you for your discussion, and I'll leave you there.
Jeannie, thank you for joining us. I'll give you both an opportunity to respond if you'd like. We've talked about both those issues already. Senator Bewley, she talks about Washburn County, which you already brought up.
Well, I know exactly where she's talking about, between Spooner and Hayward. I drive that every time I go to Madison. I'll be doing that in just a few minutes when we're done here. It's very difficult. Cell phone coverage is also extremely difficult as you're driving through the north. And again, as she said, the providers are very reluctant to go there. And when they do go there, you sometimes get 2G. You don't get the kind of capacity that you need. And that's the problem, is that we are willing to accept less. We are willing to say, well, we'll do the really good stuff here, and the rest of you can settle for, you know, slower speeds or nothing. And we can't take that approach anymore. Everyone deserves to be connected. Everyone deserves to have access to the communication that the rest of the state has. And we're just going to need to keep working at it and working at it. Also, when it comes to health care, we know that as rural communities lose population, it's harder and harder to get health care. Why do they lose population? Because they're not getting the infrastructure that they need. It's sort of a cycle. If we don't continue to give them the infrastructure, the good roads, the good schools, the broadband, the cell phone coverage that they deserve, we're going to continue to see the population leave, and then we get into that cycle of fewer and fewer services.
Representative Quinn, any further comments on Jenny's comments?
Yeah, I wish we had more time, because she brought up some great points. You know, that's exactly the conversations we've been having around broadband, because it's not just about a luxury of having internet anymore. You know, we're going to envision a time where there are healthcare providers that can zoom in on grandma and grandpa's TV or your mom and dad's TV up in the middle of Hayward and say, you know, show me your range of motion and what hurts and how are you feeling today. So I don't have to drive to Eau Claire to see my specific provider, or I don't have to drive into Shell Lake just to get shipped to Duluth. So the conversation on broadband has really been changing from this a luxury item to something that affects education, economics, healthcare, and that's why we're seeing millions and millions more being poured into this to try and reach those last miles that we know are still a struggle. And yeah, in terms of healthcare, that's why it's so important. Like this last budget, we increased millions of dollars in disproportional payments for hospitals for those that take a high number of Medicaid patients, and we know more and more are rural and are critical access hospitals. So making those investments, being willing to vote for budgets that make those investments to keep these facilities open and accessible is important.
In the few minutes we have left remaining, a couple other issues I want to make sure we get to. One of them, the two of you are co-authors of a bill that would exempt waste-to-energy incinerators like the one in Barron County, for instance, from tipping fees. Representative Quinn, what impact will that have on those facilities?
Yeah, what we want to do is treat the two incinerators in the state the same as all the recycling facilities that currently get exemption from certain DNR tipping fees. So this is really a no-brainer. So it was very easy to be bipartisan and to get this across the finish line. We're hoping, I believe it's on the Senate calendar coming up. And what that will do is we'll save thousands of dollars for both La Crosse and the Barron County facility that they can turn around and reinvest back into the plant to make sure it's efficient and as clean as possible. So we shouldn't just shove our garbage in the ground. There's no reason we can't reduce the mass, cleanly burn it, create energy, and put less and less chemicals in our landfills.
Speaking of environment, environmental groups Clean Wisconsin and the Sierra Club filed a lawsuit on Friday seeking a review of a decision by the State Public Service Commission to approve a permit for the $700 million natural gas power plant in Superior that's known as the Nemadji Trail Energy Center, saying that that plan would pose environmental threats such as depletion of groundwater, loss of wetlands, increased carbon dioxide emissions. Senator Bewley, you've been a backer of the Energy Center project. Did the PSC do enough to protect the environment when it approved this permit?
I think that I have been a backer of it, but I'm also very much in favor of any plant like this undergoing the public scrutiny that it deserves. The Sierra Club and Clean Wisconsin have every right to challenge the PSC. I don't know whether or not it was the right decision, but there is the process to challenge them, and they have every right to do that. I believe that Nemadji Trail must respond and be able to defend their reasons for wanting to put in this plant. Natural gas is a different kind of technology with less emissions than coal. And I think that the overall argument is that as coal-fired plants are coming offline, and they are, we need to have a backup to the renewable energies, particularly solar, that can be an on-demand provider. We need, unfortunately, more energy than ever. And we'll see. Again, I support Clean Wisconsin and the Sierra Club in this action.
We've got just a few seconds left. Representative Quinn, I'll ask you this question. There's a lot of talk on the national scene, of course, about the preparedness for a potential outbreak of this COVID-19, the novel coronavirus that has killed more than 3,000 individuals worldwide. Is the state ready to deal with a possible outbreak, do you think?
Yeah, and I know our officials are watching this closely, and part of our preparedness is the fact that we have some of the best hospital systems, not only in the country, but in the world. We have a great workforce that is ready and prepared to help anyone for any reason. And, of course, even though the legislature is not in session, you know, our Joint Finance Committee can always meet and work with the governor to appropriate funds in the event we need to respond to any kind of outbreak. So for the public's sake, I wouldn't worry. The state of Wisconsin is prepared, and of course we're open to having that dialogue as things progress, or hopefully not progress. Well, hopefully this goes away sooner than later.
Representative Quinn, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And Senator Bewley, good to have you along as well.
My pleasure.
State Senator Janet Bewley of Mason, State Representative Romaine Quinn of Barron joined us for this hour, and we thank you for listening as well. Mort Cypress and Catherine Thomas served as our on-air producers today. Kate Spranger managed our publicity. Next week, we talk to the new chancellor of UW-Stout, Catherine Frank, the school's first female chancellor. And don't forget, starting March 20th, the West Side will be moving to Fridays at 10. Still tackling issues affecting Western Wisconsin, still inviting your involvement with the show, just a different day of the week. I'm Dean Kallenbach. You've been listening to the West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.